Welcome to our show, Examine Life, on KKRN at 88.5 FM in Bella Vista, Round Mountain.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Pat.
Plato said, examine life is not worth living. We're going to examine
brain health.
Yep.
It's the third of three shows that we've talked about the brain and the physiology, and we've started out with perspective and attitude, and now we're down to what's good for your brain.
And we're going to do a little bit of rehash. Just Pat will give us a kind of a idea of the structure of the brain.
We talked about neurons, which are responsible, the most productive part of our brain, and glial cells, which are like glue cells. That's 90% of it. And they support the neurons to transmit what they call neuron transmitters.
And everybody hears about glial cells, or about neurons, but not glial cells. And actually now there are whole fields of study just on glial cells.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, there's whole journals about nothing but glial cells.
And neurotransmitters, which are actual chemicals, is a chemical factory. And these neurotransmitters are the chemical messengers which control what we do, think, say, everything else.
They are the things that switch the connections on and off.
That's right. So we're going to talk a little bit tonight more about health. How do you keep your brain healthy? And what it is other than broccoli and juicing and those good things that you need. Thomas Edison said the chief function of the body is to carry the brain around.
But what he was leaving out is that the chief function of the brain is to be sure that the body reproduces.
One-fifth of your blood is devoted to the brain. So the brain is important to the whole body.
That's right. It does more than think. Your brain basically runs your body. It's the CPU that controls all of your systems. You know, people maybe want to think they're controlling their body, but the brain is what runs it.
And what you eat and what you do supports your brain. And if you're not taking care of your body, your brain will develop diseases.
That's correct. There are special nutritions just for your body. I mean, for your brain. There's nutrition that your whole body needs, which also affects your brain.
Yes. And neurotransmitters are chemicals, basically. And the most common one that you know is dopamine. There are many of them. But dopamine is that pleasure, reward chemical that affects your mood and your mobility.
It's the thing that chemicals like heroin and cocaine and other things also cause you to feel those same feelings, but in extended ways that are harmful.
And when you, if you smoke, any kind of addiction, which can be anything from sugar and carbs to drugs to sex, tobacco, gambling, all of this builds receptors that the dopamine triggers cravings. That's why once you get hooked on it, you've developed a receptor on your brain that produces this dopamine that you want to keep having that which made you feel good.
That's right. It's actually a survival chemical because if you think about it deeply enough, without a pleasure center, something that's motivating you, believe it or not, even if you were starving, if your body was starving to death, it wouldn't get up and go out and find food. It has to have this drive, and that's what this chemical provides. And so when this chemical is mistreated, or it's in excess, or there's not enough of it, serious things happen.
And we're going to talk a lot about sugar tonight as one of the things because it directly affects nutrition. If you're addicted to cigarettes or drugs or gambling or sex, that really doesn't affect your nutrition like an addiction to sugar or carbohydrates does.
And actually, they probably are related because a lot of ex-smokers and ex-heroin abusers are sugar fanatics.
Well, they say pot makes you hungry, so maybe so.
That's a different thing. I don't know. For some reason, people that quit smoking, a lot of them just go crazy over the sugar.
Yeah, and it could be that sugar replaces that receptor that drugs was filling before. Now sugar is filling. There are other neurotransmitters that you're familiar with other than dopamine. That's melatonin that helps you sleep. Serotonin, adrenaline, histamines. Histamines are cause allergic reactions, and we're going to talk a little bit about that tonight, too. So let's start with plaque and inflammation and oxidation. We hear the oxidation or the rusting away of cells and that antioxidants are good for you. And I have heard this term about oxidation.
And antioxidants and rusting. And
yes, and it was like, okay, wait, what exactly is this? And it's chemistry. It's simple chemistry.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Explain
it's
it.
Simple
you
enough.
You can explain it better than me. It took
well, no,
me...
I simplify it quite a bit myself. I mean, essentially, it is rusting. It's your body needs oxygen to combine with sugar to produce energy in your body, and of course, a lot of other biological molecules besides that. But essentially, the antioxidants are. Oxygen comes in the form of O2, which is two oxygen atoms tied together. And the reason they're tied together is because they each have an electron sticking out there that requires a bonding, which makes both of their electromagnetic balance equal.
And they all come in pairs.
And so, right. And the reason they come in pairs is because they both have that extra electron hanging out there. So when they combine, they each now have two electrons on the outside. That's the real technical nerdy part of how it works. But what Pat's talking about is when your mitochondria and so on, you know, produce energy, one of the things that sometimes is left over is a single oxygen atom that now has this electron sticking out there, kind of like the buttons that your ex pushes sometimes. It's just out there and it needs something. And so...
So your old molecule has lost one of its... electrons.
Well, no, it actually has gained one by not having that other oxygen atom. It's got this electron sticking out there needing a mate. And so it
So it's free.
Yeah,
you've got one out
it's
there
a
that's free.
It's a free radical. And it's a radical because it has that extra electron. So it goes out there. Any molecule in your body in that cell that has a matching electron that it can use, it will bind to. And that's where it does damage.
So... oxidation, actually, and everything your body does, metabolism, breathing, everything creates oxidation.
Right.
And so it breaks off one of these neurons that we call free now.
Or no, radicals.
A radical. So that radical meaning it's out there doing harm.
Yeah.
And it needs a mate. So it steals one from a healthy cell.
Right. Well, it combines with a healthy cell is what it does.
And so that
would be like you growing a third arm. So now that healthy molecule... is not doing healthy things because it's not the same molecule now.
Okay, so now it's going to need to find and steal a mate from somebody else.
No, it's got that mate, but it's the wrong mate.
Okay, so
say you have
it's rusting.
Yeah, you have a molecule of some chemical that your body needs in your cell that it needs because it's that chemical. Well, this radical has attached to it. It's no longer that chemical now. It's a different chemical.
Okay, so. Antioxidants like vitamin C, we all know that's a common antioxidant. It donates this extra electron.
It combines with that oxygen radical and ties it up so that it can't go out and do harm to a cell or a chemical that you need.
So it cuts that chain of cascading events
right.
And stops the damage.
Yeah, and one thing about antioxidants that we need to know, because I'm a fanatic. I have berry shakes and veggie shakes that I do every day that I think have really helped. But there is a limit to how much antioxidants you can take. And this is something we didn't study, but I've read about it before. Your cell is a certain size. You can take all the antioxidants you want, but only a certain amount of them are needed. The rest of them aren't going to do any harm or any good. So
right. Just
be aware you don't want to go crazy on the antioxidants, but you want plenty of them in your diet.
And the free radical damage causes inflammation. And inflammation is one of the key factors in aging of the brain.
Yeah, and actually a lot of things in our body. Every day we learn more things that inflammation are causing.
And it's very, very harmful. It's very degenerative. It is one of the biggest aging contributors is inflammation. And we'll talk more about the inflammation. Two of the biggest dangers to the brain are plaque and inflammation.
Right.
And so now that you know what oxidation does, now you know why you need antioxidants, and everything the body does creates this oxidation process.
And think about the idea that oxygen is the cause of oxidation, And so we need a certain amount of oxygen for our body to live, but these people that go out and take oxygen at oxygen bars and so on, like somehow more oxygen is going to help them. First of all, it's not utilized by your body unless you need it. If you don't need it, you just exhale it, except for the ones that end up in your cells causing trouble.
So, and there's a lot of other things you can do to help focus and concentration and all of these things that has nothing to do with inhaling more oxygen.
Right, right. The reason they give it to those football players that you see on TV is just because their muscles will recover faster with more oxygen. But oxygen by itself, the air has the percentage that your body's designed to run on.
Okay. The other biggest danger to your brain is plaque. And a couple of the things that they're finding is plaque in your arteries, it causes hardening of the arteries. Well, it does the same thing to the brain. The plaque causes stiffness and inflexibility, and the brain cannot function.
And by the way, those of you that smoke out there, the materials in the cigarette smoke actually make your arteries sticky, which causes plaque to stick to them.
And contributes, again, to the degenerative diseases of the brain. So plaque and inflammation and this oxidation are the biggest threats to your brain. So you do need those antioxidants in the form of broccoli and colorful fruits and vegetables. And you need to deep breathe when you exercise. All of these things are forms of antioxidants that you need. That's vital, not only to the rest of your body, but to your brain. And they're now finding a lot of connections between sugar, high carbohydrate diet, and the formation of plaques.
Yes, your body wasn't made for those kind of concentrations of starch that you get from masses of carbohydrates that we eat in a piece of bread and all the sugar that we can get now, you know, by the bowlful.
And sugar is, sugar molecules are allowed into cells from the bloodstream via insulin. And insulin stimulates growth. It promotes fat formation and encourages inflammation. So failure of the sugars getting into our cells to burn energy causes type 2 diabetes or insulin resistance, where you keep needing more and more insulin, and it's this insulin resistance that sparks the formation of plaque. It causes the inflammation, and it causes plaque to occur in the brain and takes the place of normal brain cells.
Right. And so, again, it's a matter of moderation when you eat all those sugars and so on. A little bit of sugar, although probably no processed sugar at all would be a better idea.
Fruit sugar or fructose is something your body can easily handle. It's often combined with fiber so that it goes into your system much slower, like an apple or fruit, peach, anything that is from a tree usually has some kind of fiber in it.
But again, these things you want to take in moderation, because all modern fruits today are much bigger and have much more sugar than what the originals had, even potatoes.
But you're better off getting your sugars from fruits than you are from cakes and pies and pastries and refined sugar.
Yes, depending on the relative amounts of each that you eat. If you ate, you know, 50 apples, you might as well eat a piece of cake. So that's my point, is just moderation in all things.
Recently, the American Academy of Neurology published a study showing that people whose blood sugar is on the high end of normal have a much greater risk of brain shrinkage. And they're just starting these studies, and they're doing a lot of it with sugar, that high carb or sugars and a sensitivity to gluten are the biggest contributors to brain inflation. And today's bread was not your grandmother's bread.
And even your grandmother's bread, you know, think about this paleo idea. You know, running around in the forest, there's no way that you could gather enough wheat by hand to make even a slice of bread in any kind of a meaningful way.
And the concentration of gluten in wheat today, because of genetic modification, is much higher than it was just 60 years ago. So we're not even talking 300 years ago. We're talking just 60 years ago. So the celiac patient, they're finding many more of them. And you can have a sensitivity to gluten that does not cause you to test positive for celiac disease.
Right. And there can be I have very mild, issues with gluten that I finally discovered in my life, being a big fan of bread and pasta. Nothing that's life-threatening, but it definitely, I eat enough gluten and I get those brain effects for sure.
Well, they found out that celiac disease runs dominantly in Northern European ancestries of ours, that they have this high propensity to get celiac disease. But just the sensitivity to the gluten causes this inflammation that, again, the histamines, neurotransmitters, raise, and that cause an allergic reaction, even though it's not the kind of allergic reaction that is commonplace to celiac patients. 70 years ago, they discovered that this is common in the intestine, that celiac disease is defined as an intestinal disorder, where now they're finding that it has the same inflammation effect on the brain.
As usual, they discovered the effects are much more widespread than they thought.
Yeah, and when you think about it, gluten breaks down in the stomach as polypeptides. And they cross the blood-brain barrier. And again, once inside the brain, they bind to the brain's morphine receptor to produce that pleasing, addictive high, kind of like the dopamine high type thing.
Right. Keep remembering that, your body's designed basically to reproduce itself. And so you get these cravings for sugar and wheat and so on, not because they're good for you, but because they'll get you through. They're a vast source of energy. They'll get you through the reproductive years, and your body doesn't care if you live past that. That's up to you.
That's right. And our body doesn't produce the same amount of digestive enzymes as we age. It doesn't produce dopamine as efficiently as we age. So we get that I don't feel as great as I did. A lot of elderly get depressed, and it goes back to the dopamine production. We feel miserable. All of that is a cycle that aging is causing.
Right. Well, yeah, aging has its effects, but there are a lot of things you can do to offset those that are nutrition, which is what we're talking about now, as well as things you can do, ways that you can think, exercise, and so on. We're going to talk a little later.
Yes. And they're finding that sugar, when you consume a high sugar meal, that immediately causes a depletion of serotonin, epinephrine, dopamine, even magnesium. So the sugar has a negative effect on your body as a whole. And combine that with gluten, and you get what they call glucation, which causes tissues to stiffen and become inflexible, which results in brain shrinkage or hardening of the arteries. So these are the diet you should stay away from, the high-carb, sugar, gluten diet. And there are a lot of breads now that are gluten-free. If you have to have bread, you might seek out the gluten-free. They don't taste as bad as they used to.
They don't. Keeping in mind that a lot of those products still have major carbs, they just don't have the gluten. And the gluten does have a specific effect of its own, but you can still overload with the carbs. They won't have a strong an effect on your mind and the way your mind thinks, but you'll have some of those other effects of carbs, of just having, especially affecting your insulin production and so on.
And that insulin resistance is a precursor to diabetes. And if you can prevent that, where you have to make more and more insulin to take care of the sugar that you're eating, that you may be able to starve off the diabetes. And many of the elderly are being diagnosed with diabetes strictly as the result of aging.
Right. And if you eventually, the insulin is needed in order for you to process all of these things in your cell, for the sugar to enter your cell and do its work. And so you can't survive without that. And you have to think about that when you think about your diet. It does affect your pleasure center, but that doesn't mean that you can't not do it.
Right, right. We're going to take a little break right now. Okay. We're not going to take a break right now.
No, we're not going to take a break.
Okay. One of the other things that's good for you, and ironically, is cholesterol. And I don't mean high cholesterol. I mean too low a cholesterol is as bad as too high a cholesterol. There's a lot of studies recently that healthy cholesterol is essential for the fuel for those neurons in your brain.
And the other thing to consider is the new information that it's the cholesterol that your body makes that is a problem, even the bad cholesterol, the LDL, not the cholesterol that you eat.
And there's what they call big fluffy and little cholesterol and all of these things. But we're talking about cholesterol in the brain is it is a specific carrier of a protein that fuels your brain. And as sugar molecules attach to cholesterol, it changes the shape of the cholesterol, and which increases that free radical damage, whereas cholesterol is supposed to change the shape of proteins. So it's not supposed to be changed. That's why the combination of sugar and fats together are not that good, is because of this strange response that cholesterol has to sugar.
Right. Fats are necessary for your body. That's some of the news that I'm loving hearing these days.
But, good fats. Yeah. Healthy fats.
Well, no. Actually, about the only fat that you shouldn't eat is trans fat. Now, you need to eat things in moderation, but saturated fat is necessary. Your brain is 70% fat.
Yes.
And it's all kinds of fats.
And it's 25% of cholesterol.
Yeah. And so you need to understand that you just shouldn't have a non-fat diet. It's just not healthy.
Right. And it's as unhealthy as the high-carb, high-sugar diet.
Right. Or the all-saturated fats all the time. You need saturated fat. You need unsaturated fat. What you don't need is trans fat. Everything else you should have a reasonable amount of. At least that's what all the so-called experts are saying now.
And the omega-3s are especially beneficial to your body, and they transport fat-soluble vitamins, which are A, D, E, and K. They actually break them down and transport them into the blood, and your brain needs these critical nutrients. So those are also some of our antioxidants also need to get into the brain. That's why you need to consume them in fruits and vegetables.
Right. And so you need, I know the vegans out there don't want to have any fat and don't want to have any meat in their diet, but I don't know what to say about that other than your brain needs it.
And like we say, the brain contains 25% of the total cholesterol in your body, and it works by allowing the new synapses to form, and it puts the coating around neurons. So it helps your brain communicate.
Right. When you do a learning, one of the things that happens, a familiar pathway is formed. The coatings, the fat shroud around that particular neuron's extensions becomes thicker. And that's made from fat. So you got fat.
And that's where you create new memory. That's where you create those change how you think, change how you act, go from a negative to a positive attitude in life. It's by this development of this thickening of the fat by repetitively use of that neuron.
And we're going to talk about how wonderful change is, too.
Yes. A couple of the things that cholesterol does in your body, by the way, it allows your body to make vitamin D via your skin when it gets exposed to the UV. And it has receptors just for vitamin D. And cholesterol is involved in also the making of testosterone. So cholesterol isn't all bad, but you do need to keep it. Don't get it too low. I know a lot of drug companies are pushing lowering it. But talk to your doctor seriously and do some research on what kind of cholesterol you have. And is it big and fat and fluffy, or is it the short little ones? And all of that is very important.
Right. It is very important to do your research and to research with as much of an unbiased mind as you can. You know, I love bread and pasta. And so I was very happy to take on a diet back around the turn of the century that this woman was promoting, and it was a non-fat diet. You could eat everything else you wanted, as much as you wanted, as long as you didn't eat any fat. And I became very close to diabetes with that diet. So I was eating a lot of carbs. I just didn't eat any fat. That's extremely unhealthy. And then I know people now who are very, very skinny. They don't have any excess fat at all. And they eat salads with no fat, no dressing, you know, or no dressing that has fat in it. And it's just not healthy.
No, you do need some fat in your diet, and they're finding more and more research to support this. And in the 1980s and 90s, there was a big push to eliminate all fat from your diet, and they're now finding the result of that is negative.
Right. So we're going to be taking a break in a little while, but and we have a few more things to talk about. But understand that a lot of this has to do with moderation. And you know, we talk about the fats that are bad for you, and again, those are basically the only one you shouldn't eat any of is trans fat, and I'm as guilty as the next person of my occasional junk food, and sometimes not so occasional. I know one listener out there is probably laughing hysterically now that I've said that.
Your wife, no doubt.
Yeah, but, you know, there's meat and vegetables and so on, and I disagree with the idea that it's too expensive to eat by going to the grocery department and getting actual fresh raw foods. It's just that you have to take time to cook them. You know, woe is me.
Yes. And the omega-3s are really, really it's one of the antioxidants that is created from omega-3. A couple of the things that omega-3 exercise and calorie reduction increases the production of glutathione, which is the most important brain antioxidant. And again, the glutathione can be turned on by your DNA alone. By it triggers a protein that turns on this production of glutathione. That's why your diet is so important. Is we're trying to make it simple, explain it as simple. It's the sugars and carbohydrates interfere with the antioxidant process that all these other chemicals and good foods help you with.
And, you know, if you listen to all this information we're giving you today, it kind of goes back to this idea of the paleo diet, if you think about it. I don't promote any particular type of diet, but just think about how the body that we have today, the human body, not the pre-human or the proto-human, but the human body, what did it evolve on? And it's pretty easy to think about, you know, running around in the forest or on the savannah or whatever, what were the things that you found there to eat? And, you know, the people that survived were the ones that ate the most of those things and were healthy. So it's really kind of commonsensical. All those animals have fat. People ate a lot of fat because you could survive through the winter that way.
And regionally, people cook with different things, different spices. And now that we have international food available to us, the spice curcumin, which a lot of Indian dishes are made with, is extremely special to you. And it has helped that region of the world for millennium. So try these new, what you might call spicy foods or whatever. But these kinds of things, green tea, which, you know, Americans are hooked on coffee. But green tea is an antioxidant in and to itself.
It is. Coffee has a lot of antioxidant.
That it does. But green tea has them that are specifically brain-targeting antioxidants. So stay with the greens. I'm telling you, the broccolis, the greens, the spinach, they also are detoxifying to your body.
I agree about all the greens. Coffee is good for you.
I don't drink coffee, so this is
And by the
argument.
Way, those of you that like to take fish oil, if you're worried about the mercury, kale is very good at absorbing mercury.
Any kind of fiber, like spinach, any of these high-fiber, broccoli even, these are high-fiber vegetables, and they will attach to toxins and take them out of your system so that you don't even absorb them.
But they seem to single out kale as specific to mercury, but I'm not sure of the chemical process.
I've heard that of, what's the Mexican spice that I love so much that is like parsley?
There's so many of them.
I can't remember what it is, but it is also outstanding as kale is. We're now going to take a quick break. I'm Pat.
I'm Steve. This is Examine Life, and we're talking about brain health tonight. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
We'll drive upon that kiss. Sweetheart, I ask no more than this. A kiss to build a dream on. give me a kiss before you leave me, and my imagination will feed my hungry heart. Me, one thing before we part, a kiss to build a dream on.
Join the discussion. KKRN boasts a variety of talk radio, both from local and syndicated sources. We want to stimulate thoughtful and meaningful conversation. KKRN can offer more real conversation because we are supported by listeners. You have a voice.
Make them believe they're true. Oh, give me your lips for just a moment, and my imagination will make that moment live.
The infinite possibilities of music are showcased by the eclectic panorama of song styles that you can find on KKRN Radio. You won't find our musical explorations on more mainstream commercially driven stations. From classic country to new age, from classic folk to classic rock, from blues to jazz, and music from outside our country. You'll find it all on KKRN listener-supported radio, radio that makes you listen.
Moment live. Oh, give me what you alone can give. I'll kiss the pill I dream on.
You're listening to Examine Life on KKRN 88.5 FM in Bella Vista at Round Mountain.
I'm Steve.
I'm Pat.
We're talking about brain health tonight. We have just a little bit more about nutrition, and we're going to move into the ways that you can enhance your mental powers and keep your brain healthy.
One of the things that we just experienced was Thanksgiving, and that is all of us have had that food coma where you just want to sit down and go to sleep because you've consumed this huge meal, mostly carbohydrates, mashed potatoes, gravy, and the tryptophan of turkey all contributes to that, oh, I just want to go to sleep.
Yeah, it's funny that you can actually get pills with tryptophan in them now.
Yeah, it's turkey. Yeah. But it is, the result really is food coma, where you overeat and your system is overwhelmed with the need to start sending blood to the stomach to start digesting all that food.
Right. I mean, if you look at animals, at least especially carnivores, that's the way they operate. They gorge on, you know, they kill a big animal, they gorge on it, and then they rest sometimes for days.
And they need the rest to digest all that food.
Right.
And but we as Americans probably need to take a walk. We need some exercise.
Yeah.
To get that, to start breaking down all that food that we just consume, because normally it is high carb, and that is just going to, insulin's going to send it to fat storage if we don't get rid of it.
Well, the problem with me, or the good thing, is that you usually have grandkids now on Thanksgiving. And they want to play the monster game or something, so I can't really rest anyway.
No sleeping allowed.
Yeah.
Right. But speaking of that walk after dinner, this is extremely beneficial to you because exercise is vital to your brain.
It is. And we were having a little discussion off the air earlier tonight about this idea of taking walks, which is very healthy. But people get the idea that all you need to do, especially people who don't like exercise and love to eat, and their doctor tells them, just go take a walk after dinner, you'll be fine. And that's the very beginning of your exercise. Exercise, you should evolve into the point where you're doing vigorous exercise, and I don't care who you are. It needs to be vigorous for you.
And if you're walking, you should walk fast enough to feel it, where you feel yourself breathe. You're helping yourself breathe because you're doing something more than average activity for you. So whatever it is, whatever your moderation is or your ability to walk, if it's, you know, 10 minutes or it's 2 hours, you should feel like you are invigorated by it.
But keep in mind that especially as you age or if you're trying to fight obesity or something like that, you need to exercise every muscle group in the body. And walking is healthy, but it basically exercises your legs and maybe your lungs.
And you should do that 4 times a week. And it can be anything you love to do. It can be dance. It can be bicycling. It can be swimming. Whatever it is that you enjoy doing, you will benefit from because you'll do more of it.
As for me, it's weight training. And I can get my heart rate up pretty high doing that. And so Pat's right. You need to find your niche, but it needs to challenge you. If it's not a challenge, you're not doing enough.
And they're finding that exercise is extremely beneficial to your brain, as is fasting. And, you know, centuries ago, our ancestors often fasted because there wasn't enough food available. But if you fast just once a month, and I learned this myself a number of years back when, due to my hectic schedule, I would fast every Monday. And I found I was thoroughly focused. I was very productive, very clear-headed when on those days. And it does work. Fasting does work. And you only need to fast for a day. And it can be once a month. But it is extremely beneficial to your brain because it clears the brain. It allows all the detoxification to happen through the brain cells itself with those antioxidants washing through the brain. So, and you do need water. You should drink water when you're fasting. Fasting doesn't mean you don't consume any water. You should have water.
And fasting is difficult to do for some of us. I've never been real successful at it. Eating's a compulsion of mine, so it's difficult to go 24 hours without eating. I've done it. When I was younger, sometimes I had to do it without a choice. But it's not easy for everyone to do. But, you know, as long as you can. And that's why, another reason why you shouldn't eat late at night. I usually, during a work day, will have my last meal about 3 or 4 o'clock. That means that I'm fasting for about 12 hours every day.
Yes. And the word breakfast means is to break the fast of the last 12 hours of overnight.
Right. And people eat way too late at night. And then they don't eat a good breakfast. They'll eat something because eating late at night actually leaves you more hungry in the morning.
And if you start your day with protein, you won't get as hungry as if you start your day with carbs.
Right, because your body can make the carbs it needs out of the protein, but it's a long process, and so it trickles the carbs into your blood all day instead of dumping them in there the way cereal would.
And if you are going to fast, you might want to take a vitamin B complex because it helps prevent that headache that a lot of people experience when they fast, particularly caffeine. If you consume a lot of coffee in the morning, it's really hard to fast on water. You might try fasting with just coffee for a while, where there's no actual food, just for a day. And your body can go 24 hours without food, believe it or not. I know it's hard to believe.
Yeah. I can go that long without food. I don't know if I can go that long without eating.
Well, we have an abundance of everything now. And the abundance of food makes us grazers. We eat all day long.
Right. And we aren't designed to have an abundance. We're designed to have to go out and get what we need and to find it and hunt for it and work for it. And we're not doing that part. We're just going, you know, driving down to the store, getting as close to the doors as we can, grabbing all the wrong kind of food and going back home and stuffing it down. It's not working.
And research has proven that fasting is beneficial for your brain.
And eating healthy food is beneficial, and exercise is extremely beneficial. Now, there's two ways that the food and the exercise benefit your brain. Some foods are beneficial specifically for your brain. Other foods are beneficial for your whole body, which is the thing that supports your brain. And
yes.
And the same thing with exercise. Exercise is not just, it helps increase the blood flow to your brain and is healthy that way. But it also challenges your brain in ways that make your brain grow stronger because it's having to do something.
And your breathing should be deep breathing at least once a day, even if it's just a deep breath, counting to 12 at night before you go to bed. This also helps with serotonin production by breathing deeply. Take a deep breath through your nose and exhale through your mouth. That is beneficial. Think about anything that supports your blood system supports your brain, because all of that blood goes to your brain.
Keep in mind also, Pat talked about, I think it was how much cholesterol is in the brain. Actually, the largest single organ for processing, or the largest amount of oxygen processing of any organ, is your brain.
Yes, and your liver, which is one of the cholesterol-producing organs, also functions has a critical function for your blood. So you need to have these greens in your diet to help purify and remove these toxins from your system, or they grab hold of them before they even get into your bloodstream. So that's why fruits and vegetables are so critical to your diet, and they keep saying, you know, you need 5 to 12 servings a day of just fruits and vegetables and not sugar. We don't need sugar at all. We just like sugar.
And when it comes to exercise, keep in mind there's an area of the brain called the hippocampus, which deals with recent memory processing. And now it's been shown that part of that hippocampus, which we call the CA1, I won't go into detail on that, is subject more severely to oxygen lack. So if you decrease oxygen to that area, you're going to lose some of your recent memory processing. And that's where exercise comes in.
And it's critical to the blood oxygen to your brain as well. When you exercise, you breathe more deeply. When you take that, next time you take that walk, even if it's around the mall, realize when you start and how much deeper you're breathing by the time you're done.
Yeah, and that's, as Pat said earlier, that walking needs to challenge you. It's not taking a stroll down the mall. That doesn't do it.
Well, the people that you see walking around the mall are usually hoofing it.
Right, and that's what we're talking about. It's not strolling, it's walking. It's getting exercise. When you're done, you're pretty tired. And if you're not, you didn't exercise, you just had a relaxing time.
Now, to me, exercise does not, I don't feel tired. I feel invigorated after exercise. I don't know why, but I always have. So that's why I guess I like it.
Yeah.
Whereas if it makes you feel tired, then I can see why you might not want to do it.
Yeah,
but to me,
I don't know.
It's very invigorating.
I feel invigorated mentally when I exercise, but I'm tired because I want to challenge. You know, as you age, you lose muscle mass. And the only way that you gain muscle mass, young or old, is by literally wearing your muscles out. Muscle building, I don't mean giant muscles from bodybuilders, I mean just building the tissue that needs to be there, is done by actually destroying muscle tissue, and so your body overcompensates by repairing it and making it more solid and making more of it. So you have to challenge your muscles or you're not doing anything.
But cardiovascular activity is not muscle building so much as it is the inhaling, exhaling, the stress on your heart, that vigorous walk, that swimming, that bicycling, that may or may not be muscle building. I'm sure it builds your thighs if you're bicycling, but it is a cardiovascular exercise that is not as muscle teardown-ish.
Well, it does if you extend yourself enough. I mean, essentially, as I said, you don't build muscle unless you're tearing muscle down. That's just the nature of the human physiology. But as I said, with me, you get the right weight training program. And I have a daughter who's a trainer, and she is very much more active than me. But they do their aerobic exercise with weights. Because as you age, you lose muscle. And muscle does more than keep you strong. It has a lot of biochemical effects on you. So,
yes, it does.
But I'm kind of getting off track on that. It's just very important. Exercise, your body has to manage all those muscle movements and everything when you exercise. That's training for your brain as well. There's just tons of research. I'm going to try to go over some of it today that has to do with the effect of thinking on improving your brain. It's like any other part of your body, use it or lose it. There was a study with nuns that started back in the 80s that actually is still going on. And that's one of the things they found out. For instance, some of those nuns that had the ones that had bachelor degrees had a tendency, less of a tendency, to develop mental weakness as they got into their 80s and 90s. And even Alzheimer's, even the ones who were going to get Alzheimer's got it later, because that early mental processing laid down extra dendrites, which were like a buffer against the development of the Alzheimer's.
And many nuns lived to be well into their 80s and 90s.
And this, and the reason they did the nuns wasn't because of any particular idea that they had better brains or better health. It was just because the archives in this nunnery were so complete that they had good data on all of them. And that was really, anything they discovered was by accident. But again, it wasn't so much that the nuns' life was better. It's that of these nuns, the ones who had higher education earlier in life, and again, you don't have to have a college degree. It's about how much you think. And the nuns that tended to have more complex writing skills seem to also not develop Alzheimer's later in life. So there's some interesting things about the brain and how it works. And the question is, that tendency was probably genetic in those nuns, but if you develop the same kind of thinking, would it help you help prevent Alzheimer's? And that's what we don't know yet.
And you also wonder, nuns, I would think, by nature, do more meditation. And they know that meditation is a relaxation process of the brain and allows it to release other chemicals and endorphins. So it might even be, that might be contributing it. And there's many, you know, shaman or wise men, you might say, that believe that meditation is extremely beneficial to the body as a whole.
Well, meditation has been shown to be effective, but actually when they study meditation, what the person's really doing is focusing and concentrating. It's, we always get the idea of relaxation with meditation, but Buddhist meditation, for instance, the idea is to actually focus in a very strong way on a single thing and to stay focused on that thing, which is hard work.
But it is stress reducing.
It can be, certainly, but not in the beginning because you're trying so hard to focus and concentrate. Trust me, I know.
The learning curve is steep.
Yeah. I mean, anything, I mean, you can have, it does relieve stress, but it's interesting how it does it. It's not so much in the relaxing, which relaxing is healthy, again, done in moderation. But it's actually, even the deep meditation, the focus and concentration takes you to a brain state that you come out of it and you're improved. You're more relaxed. But it's because it's a reduction in stress more than the actual relaxing of the meditation. And it is very good for you. And there are some amazing things, physiological effects they've seen from meditation. But children and rats, which is where they started all their experiments, that have more rich environments tend to have better brain development. And we're talking about actual physical development of the prefrontal cortex. It's thicker.
Is that not from physical stimulation?
Well, from mental stimulation.
Physical
can help too, but what I'm talking about is an enriched environment where the child is constantly being communicated with and talked to and held and all of those things. The worst thing you can do for your child is let them wake up to television in the morning. It's a passive exercise. It doesn't involve any creative thought. You know, they have some blocks. They have to create things. I was raised, unfortunately, by television, and that is a challenge. And it's not good for your creative abilities. It's not good for your brain. Having to do things, having to think of things, having to remember things, that's what affects your mental development. And it's not too late when you're an adult. The proof is all there scientifically. You can take a 90-year-old adult and have some major improvement in their ability to think if you challenge them mentally, which they will resist.
But they will benefit. Regardless of their age, they will benefit.
Right. It's very healthy. All of the research shows that. Even a study, I was reading a paper on by a woman who is about 73 years old, who is a neuroscientist, and it's amazing the things that they've come up with. The immune system can be affected by mental challenges. You can actually build your immune system by thinking in certain ways. And this experiment, they particularly talked about playing bridge and how it causes you to plan ahead and to have short-term memory exercise and to think about things. And they measured these women before and after a bridge game and actually found that, the CT4 immunochemical was increased in that short period of time of playing bridge.
And that's mind-stimulating.
Right.
It's an exercise for your brain.
Right. It just boils down to use it or lose it. And we don't, you know, with our iPhones and our computers and our televisions, we do a lot of passive things, but people aren't creating anymore. I remember when I had toy soldiers as a kid, and I had to pose them and make them look like they were having a battle, and I had to visualize this whole battle in my mind. And now you have video games where it's all being created for you. All you have to do is respond. And that's not the way to build your intelligence.
There are some avatar games that might be stimulating enough for kids, but that's not what they gravitate to usually.
Well, again, there are games that make kids think, but the problem is that games tend to run in certain styles, and they think the same way every time. They solve different problems, but they solve them using the same part of their brain, whereas they have to imagine the whole game. I have a couple of my daughters that have kids, and they. I remember my granddaughters in Ohio outside, because she said you can't sit inside and play with computers, you have to go outside. And they'd go out there and get with the neighbor kids, and they would invent whole games. That's how you develop a brain. And there are physical changes that occur when you do that.
Interestingly, schools have stopped writing in cursive, or handwriting is what we called it. And yet writing your name in cursive stirs confidence and problem-solving skills of the brain. And they've proven this. And yet it's schools are dropping teaching cursive writing.
Right. There's it's this general tendency to not want to challenge kids. I'm not sure where that's coming from. Don't let them be hungry. Don't let them imagine things that you don't want them to imagine. Don't let them get sad. Don't let them feel like they're being picked on. Just protect them from everything so that the brain has no reason to develop any defenses.
There's a lot of things that have come out in those oddball things you know or they've discovered. And drawing circles in ever-increasing sizes increases your memory and relaxes you somehow. This season, I've seen a lot of these adult coloring books that they're selling. If you just draw circles in ever-increasing sizes, like a spiral, it will increase your memory. Surprisingly. Why?
I'll have to try that. I have a terrible memory. Between the ADD and the 70s, my memory sucks.
Yeah. Well, I have some crazy tricks or study habits that we'll go over shortly.
Yeah, we're almost running out of time. Some of the things you can do for effective learning is to reduce interference and space your learning sessions out. And, you know, there's some studies that show that when you are trying to memorize something by rote, that you read it several times, and then you wait for a certain number of minutes before you read it again, and then you wait for a little bit longer time before you read it again. And when you follow the right cadence of this, you actually have better retention.
They also found fish oil. The omega-3 in fish oil increases your ability to recall facts.
Right. Yeah, that kind of oil has been, it's one of the few fats that have been known to be healthy for your brain for quite a while. And sleeping after you're learning, you tend to recall more than those who stay awake after they learn. And that's what dreams are about, is processing what you've done during the day. Essentially cleaning out your brain in a sense. And your brain is just another mechanism evolved for survival. And so you have to think about it in those terms. And spiritual or not, the body is about survival. And your brain, that's what it does. And so when you understand how it works, you can make it work the way you want it to.
And ironically, laughter or a smile before taking a test increases your ability to remember.
Oh, and positive thinking is being shown over and over and over again. Saying, and I'm guilty of this myself, saying I can't learn that is the worst thing you can do if you want to learn something.
Yes, and smile while you do it.
Yeah, and smile while you do it. And generally, finding a way to make something meaningful helps you learn it. And And you can do that. It doesn't matter what the subject is. It can be the nature of paper clips. You can make that meaningful if you try. And in the trying, you're exercising your mind.
Yes, and they found that we remember best in blocks of four. Like anything to do with groups of four, like even a grocery list, like
it's a music thing.
Yeah, is it a music thing?
It's a rhythm. Yeah, it's a lot of those four beats. It's yeah,
like bread and butter, eggs and milk. I need at the grocery store. It's something that is they say it helps you remember. Just a group of four things.
It's your brain and body work in rhythms, and when you can figure those rhythms out. It's amazing how many different things they affect. And again, the positive thinking about learning, that's very, very important. If you're studying for tests and so on, don't cram. Cramming is not learning. Learning is done over time. Apply meaning to what you're learning. Relate it to other things. There's an interesting test called Strengths Quest. That's strengths as a plural and quest, all one word. And you can go online and take this test. It costs about $10, but it's very interesting. They give you, when I did mine, these were things that I thought of as weaknesses in myself, and they give them to you as strengths, and they explain why. And it was a sea change in thinking about some of my own characteristics.
And we all learn differently, and there are a lot of learning, what we call disabilities. But it's everyone has a learning difference.
The left brain learner, the right brain learner,
yes,
tactile learner.
Those that are visual learners. Dyslexia is sometimes, they consider a learning disability, but it is somewhat of an input. The student cannot possibly absorb black on white or white on black, but yet they can blue and gray, these types of things. So learning disabilities are sometimes unique to the individual, and ADD now, they're finding more and more has to do with diet, that if a student who has ADD, if their diet is changed in one way or another, they can benefit from that. So it might be something to explore if you have a child with ADD.
And ADD is an inherent thing, but think about it. If nutrition does affect your brain, and it's very clear that it does, the proof is there, then it would affect somebody with ADD, just not because they're wrong in any way, but just because they also have a brain.
Right. And a lot of, like I say, a lot of learning disabilities have nothing to do with diet. Dyslexia is something that it deals with input and how you respond, students. But a lot of the other things have direct results of diet. They have proved this with many childhood diseases. I can't remember the movie where the child had a lack of a certain kind of oil.
Right. Lorenzo's oil, I think it was.
Yeah. Yes. So the body does respond to food. It is critical that you control your diet and make it as good as possible.
And remember to exercise vigorously. And remember to think. Make your kids create. I know it's nice for them to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and go to the TV. Just tell them, no, you have to have books or blocks or toys or whatever. But, you know, challenge them. Don't let them sit in front of a phone all day. Let them imagine. I tell you how wonderful it looks for my grandkids because they just aren't allowed to sit and play with phones. They have to think. And it's very important to develop those skills early in life. And I'm going to go on forever, and the music is telling us we're out of time.
Good night.
Good night.